You and I back together again, wrapping up another busy week, Friday, April 26th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We had our weekly chat with former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso, and we focused on the progress, or maybe lack thereof, of an election reform bill at the state capitol. New Haven Independent editor and publisher Paul Bass stopped by to give us his thoughts on the passing of longtime Elm City developer Joel Schiavone. Chris Caruso is with us. Chris, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Happy Friday, Paul.
Oh, man. You know, Chris, sometimes in life, I'm sure when you were up in the General Assembly, you said it writes itself, right? Didn't you say
that? Oh, sure it does. Yeah. At times it has to, you know?
Oh, man. So, Chris, where do we stand on this? I looked this up last night, and I sent you the link today where this thing is. This House Bill 549A that's supposed to be some modicum of election reform here. What's going on here?
Well, I read it, Paul, and, you know, let me use an Italian word, if I could, to describe
it. Okay, sure.
You ready?
Yeah.
Orario della spettacolo.
Okay.
Which means showtime.
All right.
And there's nothing to it. It's regurgitating things that the Secretary of the State had proposed for Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm.
For example, it requires all of the ballot boxes be monitored with electronic, surveillance. It requires, what are some of the other stuff she talked about? Limiting the time that the applications can mm-hmm. be circulated. And that's about it. And, you know, we saw what happened when the judge ordered the reduction of time for circulating the absentee applications.
Yeah.
You still ended up with about the same amount of absentee applications that you did before the judge's ruling. The ballot boxes are not the problem because now the criminals won't use them again. They're going to know that they're all under camera and they won't use them. And plus they saw what happened, so they'll avoid that. So it's really nothing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sad to say that. I think the only strong proposal, and now the bill is in the Judiciary Committee, it may not even come out, Paul. You've got about a week or so left.
Well, that's my point,
yeah.
Chris. I think May 8th is the closing date. Now, you know that those last hours, Chris, it's the implementer, it's the budget and all this, and what rats are in the implementer. Could they, I'll use another Italian phrase, Mr. Caruso, could they have the guglions to actually not do anything on this? To me, that would be inconceivable.
No, I think they'll do something. I think what you're going to see, this is going to be, I think with the whole session, there's more and more bills that aren't going to have the time to be debated, mm-hmm. so they're going to put them on the budget as implementers. So I think you'll see this put on there. That way they can say they did something, but they're actually doing nothing. The problem isn't the ballot box. The problem is how do the ballots get to the ballot box, and what's being done, especially with the applications. That's where the problem lies, and no one seems to want to address it. You know, at the hearing, when I listened to the GAE committee, the Government Administration Elections Committee, I was surprised at Chairman Blumenthal's comments. You know, he was asking, and I'm going to paraphrase, were there indictments, were there, guilty pleas, was there some type of, criminal activity? Well, is that when we wait to do things? We've already seen that the judge basically said there were criminal activities. Not even basically, he said it, and that's what gave him rise to overturn the election. So we know they exist, so why aren't we putting safeguards in place to protect the citizens? And frankly, where has been the Secretary of the State? She should have been, right after all these elections, she should have been holding public forums to gather from Bridgeporters, what suggestions to curb the abuse. But that was never done. And the elected officials, for the most part, have all been silent. No one wants to address the issue, and it's because of incumbency. The absentee system has actually benefited people running for elected office, especially mm-hmm. incumbents, so they don't say anything. But the truth remains is, the facts remain is that you have to limit the amount of applications a person, political operative in a campaign, can get in order to circulate them. Secondly, there should be a prohibition on political operatives or campaign workers or candidates, they shouldn't even be allowed the applications. That's where the root problem is. Secondly, in buildings where there are a lot of senior citizens, people with special needs, people with disability. That's where you should have monitoring going on so that the abuse doesn't take place. Those are the root problems, and those are the where the solutions lie. But this legislation that I've read, and I didn't read the entire text, but the summary, I think, put it together well. It does nothing, Paul. So, you know, all we'll do is we'll roll it out and say, we did something, when in fact it's nothing. We already have laws in place that if people abuse them, there can be prosecution for them. You know, that already exists. I think, you know, Chairman Stastrom in the Judiciary Committee, you know, he wants to propose an extension of the statute of limitation when it comes to these, which I think makes sense.
Yeah.
Because if the statute runs out, then you can't prosecute people. So I get that. And I think that's probably the only strong point of this. But the rest of it is just, you know, like I said, an Italian showtime. That's all. It's a feel-good, do-nothing bill. And I'm amazed by it. And maybe it's because they all figure, well, it's a Bridgeport issue. And so, you know, we can just keep Bridgeport out there and let them handle the problem. We don't have to deal with it. There was supposedly a bill going around that the state would have the ability to provide oversight in the cases of, you know, election fraud. I don't know where that is. I don't think that's going to go anywhere. So, you know, again, we're seeing nothing. And so now we have to wait for the next election when more abuse occurs. Maybe people have to go to jail and then the legislature will say, well, there is a problem. I don't get it. I just have never seen the inactivity on this major issue before. If I was chairman of the GAE committee, as I was in the past, that bill would have never gotten out of the committee the way it is in its current form. It does nothing. And other than maybe to appease some people to say we did something.
And Chris, you bring up a great point, and I've said it before. My eyes bulge and my head cracks when I hear people say, well, it's only Bridgeport. You know, that's like having a downtown, like, Main Street, right? And the only store that ever gets broken into, like the diamond stores and the high-end stores, they're all right. Yeah, but some little run-down bodega keeps getting burglarized. That's like the cops saying, well, it's only one store. You know, you know, whatever. Everybody else is fine. It's only one store. What do you mean it's only one store? I mean, that drives me nuts.
Right. And the facts bear out the point, Paul, that it isn't just Bridgeport. You know, I've told people who raise that, go to the SEC filing complaint, and you'll see it's not just Bridgeport. And you had the lead attorney on the SEC, the State Elections Enforcement Commission, calling for more investigators for his office.
Yes.
And you see, over the years, the legislature has just slowly dismantled that office. and believe me, they've done it with staffing. They put limits on the time of investigation. They only, in some cases, if they don't investigate the case within a year and file charges, the matter is dismissed. But at the same time, they're reducing staff to do the investigations. That's one of the reasons why SEC referred this whole matter in Bridgeport to the state's attorney's office, because the state's attorney's office is the criminal side of, you know, the arm of the judiciary committee, of the judiciary, I should say, for the state. And so they'll go out and have more investigation, more resources that they can do this. But it's just ludicrous. And, you know, frankly, there should be a commission that's set up. And I'm not crazy about commissions or work groups, but there should be a commission made up of objective individuals outside of the legislature to recommend to the legislature steps to curb this abuse. Because it ain't going to happen, Paul, by the people who are in the legislature. It's just not. Yeah. And because they're incumbents, they're come from separate towns. It's the same thing when I was chairman of the GAE committee. Yeah. I tried to bring ethics reform in the town, actually set up. And let me tell you, talk about, a firestorm that was. And
Caruso,
you know,
hold on. What are your ethics? What are you talking about? Yeah. Get out of here.
And, you know, Paul, in one town, the police chief was also the first selectman.
Oh, boy.
And then when I would talk to these towns, they'd say, well, we don't need ethics. We know one another. We know how to police ourselves.
That's problem. What they used to say to me. You know everybody else. That's the problem.
Yeah. It's bizarre, Paul. And it's like the city council talking about salary increases or salaries, I should say.
Okay.
You've got some members of the city council who work for the city. So now what, they're going to get double pay? It's bizarre, Paul. And you know, and it just goes on and on. And I'm really shocked. I read the summary of the bill and and looked at a couple of other things, and it's really sad. But it's just the, you know, let's put cameras on the ballot boxes. that should really do it. And now there are dumb criminals out there.
Yeah, no, there are.
About it.
There are.
But many are going to go? How many are going to go to the ballot box now and drop ballots in?
Unreal. Hey, Chris, thank you as always. Let's keep the discussion on this going. Maybe somebody will hear us. Chris Caruso, thanks, and have a great week.
You too, Paul.
Appreciate it. Thanks. If you go to the New Haven Independent, which you should, as I often say, as often as possible for great news about the Elm City, whether you live there, you were born there, or still have contacts there, go to newhavenindependent.org. And if you scroll down, you'll see a story, Mr. Downtown Dies and Downtown Lives On. We talk about Mr. Joel Schiavone, who, if you at all have any connections to New Haven over the past 30 or 40 years, the name certainly rings a bell and more. As often when we go to the Independent, our buddy, our pal Paul Bass, the founder, editor, and a great reporter still covering all of New Haven, want to talk with Paul here about the legacy of Joel Schiavone. Hey, Paul, how are you, sir? Good to have you back.
It's great to be talking to you, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Boy, Joel Schiavone, Paul, there was a time, probably over a 30, 40-year span, if I do the math roughly, where the name Joel Schiavone, a lot of people hearing that probably now going, oh, yeah. There wasn't a month or a week that went by or a year that went by that he wasn't doing something for the city he loved.
And doing something big that was dreaming. He wasn't just collecting checks or collecting rents.
Mm-hmm.
He had a whole dream of what New Haven could be, and people forget, not you, but people are younger, might not even know, that New Haven was really kind of shut down after urban renewal ended. And after all these beautiful buildings got knocked down and people fled to the suburbs if they could, and businesses fled, and it was dark at night, and nobody was living downtown. Schiavone had this idea of how New Haven could be an interesting, lively place by no longer trying to imitate the suburbs. You know, the suburbs are there for good reason, and people go there for what they can get there, you know? And but he thought there were a lot of people who would like to be in cities if they felt safe and enjoyed it, where you could have a lot of fun stuff to do all the time, all different kinds of people and restaurants and businesses that were distinctive. And he thought rather making it a car-centric city, the way the suburbs are built around the car, the New Haven aired in the middle 20th century, trying to just get people in and out, zooming on cars and trying to compete with the suburbs for big box stores and malls, which work well in more spread out areas. But cities were about density and people bumping up against each other. So you had this whole idea that you could have like all those what beautiful old buildings were left, like the Schubert Theater, the old Roger Sherman Theater, the buildings around that, fix them up historically to look different from what you find other places. Have apartments right downtown with the theaters reopened because the Schubert had been closed, Roger Thurman, which Sherman which became the Palace and now is Costume Music Hall reopened. And instead of kicking out local businesses, get businesses out there like the Anchor Bar, the Owl Shop, the Claire's Cornucopia, and help them stay there so that it's something different from what you find elsewhere. And even though he didn't get to bear the profits from all that, and we could talk about that, his vision came true, and it came true in other small cities around the country, especially with universities and hospitals, that decided that they could try a renewal a different way, which is more modest, not knocking down buildings, not trying to imitate the suburbs, not building for the car, but have like wide sidewalks, street lights, apartments downtown mixed in with galleries and theaters and ethnic restaurants and stores, and with a lot going on. And that vision did work in New Haven. It was a little before his time. It worked a little bit.
Yeah.
And then after he lost all the properties to foreclosure, and Yale took it over, but the city was able to build up in a big way starting after 2000 when small cities were back. And people, empty nesters, young adults who want to be around creative people and have a lot of things to do, were coming back. And New Haven became the single most attractive place for empty nesters and young adults to move and live into a downtown, really the only city for a long time. You see some of it in Middletown, Norwalk. You really don't see it in Hartford. You didn't see a lot of it in Bridgeport or Waterbury, but you really saw it in New Haven. And and it was Schiavone's vision.
Yeah, and he, Paul, above and beyond that, he had the money, he had the ties. The guy was, and this helps, right? He was a bit of a character, too. Like, oh, what did Joel Shea say? And everybody knew him as Joel, right? Whether he was playing his banjo in a restaurant or camping out on top of the Coliseum to try and save the Nighthawks. He, you know, I think he had part ownership or ownership of the team at one time.
He
dabbled in everything. But part of the, whether you love the guy or not, he was a character. Character, wasn't he?
And he argued with everyone. He argued with his brother when they inherited a scrap metal yard, so he got out of that. He argued with city officials. He argued with reporters, which was always fun. And he, because he loved to talk to everybody, and he had his dreams, and he put up, he ran for mayor, didn't work, led a tax revolt. But in the end, he had the vision that everybody came around to, not just the New Haven. They call it new urbanism. That word wasn't being thrown around. In 1982, there was a Congress of New Urbanism in the early 90s that set forward principles for how you redevelop cities and learn from the mistakes of urban renewal. And word for word, it was the Schiavone plan. So, you know, that was – but, yeah, he would dress in a tutu and play his banjo. He'd play with Woody Allen at the Bar Mill Pond Tavern on the shoreline. And he'd you know, as you said, he camped on in a tent on top of the Coliseum to try to get people to save the Nighthawks. He always had something going on. And, you know, later in life, he lost a lot of money, and he moved into a frat house.
You write that he died penniless. He died penniless.
Yeah.
Oh.
But he still had places to crash, and he was in love with someone he had known before. After three divorces, he found someone that they had a lovely time together, and he was in a wheelchair, and he couldn't type, she typed stuff for him, but he still came on the radio with me, and he still had all sorts of ideas, getting people mad. He'd attack Yale for mauling New Haven, make it like a mall rather than distinctive. And he always was in the mix, you know, and it was till the end. He was a delightful and fun and sometimes a rascal person who makes a place interesting and left his mark.
Paul Bass of the New Haven Independent, the guest. A few more minutes with him talking about the great Joel Schiavone, who passed away on Monday at 87. Paul, it's interesting you mentioned that. To go back to that a minute, you know, the three towns in Connecticut, or three cities that we look at in the triangle, Bridgeport, New Haven, and Hartford. When you, all three are desperately trying, but you're right, there is something a little different. Now, people could say it's about Yale. I get it. I understand that. But that vision you said that Joel Schiavone ushered in or pushed about, you know, the urbanism, you said, the new urbanism, that you could live in a city, but it'd be kind of cool. I still think New Haven at this point is, of the big three, and the other two are trying, is the only one of the three that is really trying that and succeeding.
It's fun and interesting. Everyone's a dreamer like Joel Schiavone. It doesn't have to be from Yale. There's so many interesting galleries. The restaurants are great. The night music is great. Cafe 9, last night it was a Toad, so Waxahachie. He was awesome. Up-and-coming Americana artist. Great parks, places to walk. And it's those historic buildings that didn't get knocked down during that horrific spree of demolition and urban renewal. They're really beautiful. They're lovely places to live and hang out in and walk the streets of. So, yeah, I think New Haven, after doing so much wrong, did so much right.
Is it possible, Paul, do you think, in the present day setting, not just here in Connecticut, but in general, is it possible to have a Joel Schiavone again, or are those days gone?
I think everyone in New Haven's a dreamer. That's what I love about the place. And, like, we're wrong 9/10 of the time, and we get everybody mad, and you chase rainbows, but that, you know, something hits. You know, and I think there are a lot of Joel Schiavones in different ways around in New Haven. It's a really fun place.
All right, Joel Schiavone passing away this past Monday at the age of 87. Check out the story, Mr. Downtown Dies, But Downtown Lives On, written by my guest, who does a fabulous job of running the New Haven Independent. Check it out, newhavenindependent.org, Paul Bass. Paul, thanks as always. Take care. Be good, and we'll chat down the road.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go.